Our parsha is Parshas Vayetze, and we'll quickly run through our parsha. We'll dedicate our learning to Jonathan Ballard, Yonasan ben Malka. Hashem should give him a speedy release and bring him back to us here in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov leaves, we saw at the end of last week's parsha, he's running from his brother. And an interesting thing happens. He's on his way to Haran. Suddenly he meets up with a special place. He goes to sleep. And he takes some stones. And he has a dream. He sees a ladder going up to heaven. He sees angels going up and down the ladders. And God standing above him and says, I am the God of Avram and Yitzhak, your fathers. That land I'm going to give you, and your children are going to be like the earth. You will expand in every direction, and you'll be a source of blessing for all of humanity, and I will protect you and bring you back here. I won't leave you till I bring you back and fulfill what I've just promised you. And Yaakov awakens and says, wow, I realize this is a holy place. I was unaware. And he realizes this is the gates to heaven. And in the morning, he sets us the stone. He libates it with oil. And he names the place Beit El. And takes a vow that if God takes care of him and brings him back, gives him everything he needs, and he'll establish this place as a place of worship to Hashem and give a tithe to the poor. And then he goes and he meets the shepherds and he asks them, what's going on? Do you know Laban? And they say, yeah, everything's good by him. And there's Rachel coming. And he says, what you guys hanging around for? And they say, we can't take the stone off the well until everyone gets together. And he walks over and just rolls it off. He's a big, strong guy, stronger than all the shepherds put together. He rolls the stone off the well, and he gives the sheep, Rachel's sheep, to drink. And he tells her, and she runs home, and tells her father that the uncle came. And he lives with Laban for a month, and then Laban says, look, we're family, so what do you want as your wages? And Yaakov says, I'll work for 7 years for Rachel, your little daughter. And Laban says, good idea, fine. Doesn't say. We'll discuss that in a minute. Yaakov is 70 years old. Rachel is 7, 9, 12, 15. 70. Yaakov is 70 years old. Yes. That's a pretty big age gap. Yeah.
Yitzchak was like 30 though, right? When he got married?
Yitzchak was 40 when he got married. Rachel and Leah are twin sisters. Leah has the softness in her eyes. Rachel is very good looking. And when the time comes for marriage, Laban tricks him and he makes it all dark. And that night he's with Leah. And the next morning he says, wait a second, you're not Rachel, you're Leah. Goes back to Laban and says, why you trick me? Laban says, our custom is you don't marry off the little one before the big one. Finish this week. And then we'll give you Rachel and you'll work for me another 7 years. And that's what happens. And Leah starts having children. Reuben, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. And then she stops, and Rachel sees she can't have kids, and she comes to Yaakov and says, give me kids. It's like I'm dead without kids. So Yaakov says, what do you want me to do? And she gives him the maid, and she marries, she marries Bilhah. And she has children from her, Dan and Naphtali. And then Leah sees she's not catching up. She's not having any more kids. So she asks Yaakov to marry her maid, Zilpah. And then she has two kids, Gad and Asher. And then Rachel finally has kids. Leah has kids. Yisachar, Zvulun. Rachel has a child, Yosef. And then 14 years are up. And Laban says, no, I want you to stick around. Let's make a deal. They make a deal that Yaakov should get all the striped cattle. They'll take out all the striped cattle. And from now on, any striped or brown or different colored cattle, Yaakov will get. And Yaakov does some kind of trick with the troughs where the animals will always see striped and brown, and that could affect the kids they have. And Yaakov starts flourishing. And every time Laban tries to trick him, God makes it work for Yaakov. The time comes, Yaakov is extraordinarily wealthy, and Laban and his children are very jealous, and Yaakov hears this, and God tells him time to go back home. Yaakov calls his wives, and they agree, and they figure it's a good time to run, because Laban is out, what's it called when you cut the hair of the sheep?
Shearing
the sheep, and Lavan gets word, he gives chase, and the night before he catches up to Yaakov, God appears to him in a dream and says, "Don't you dare harm Yaakov." Lavan catches up to Yaakov and says, "What'd you do? What a foolish thing. What'd you run away for? Even if you missed your father, what'd you steal my God for?" Yaakov says, Well, I had to run because I was scared you'd steal your daughters from me. And your God, no one here stole it. If anyone stole it, they'll drop dead." And Yaakov doesn't know that his wife Rachel stole that idol. That idol was, she figured, "I'll take it away. Maybe my father will become a better person. He'll stop worshiping idols." And Lavan searches all the tents, and he obviously doesn't find it. Rachel hides it and sits on the seat where it's hidden under that seat. And she tells her father, "I'm not feeling well, I can't get up, Dad." And he doesn't find it. And Yaakov starts yelling at Lavan and he says, "What did I ever do wrong to you that you ran like this? You checked everything I had over 20 years. Have I ever taken anything from you? I've been the fairest as possible and you've been so unfair." And Lavan says, "Well, you're right. I just came because I love my daughters and my kids and I want to bless them. Let's make a pact." They build a pile of stones and they agree. Neither one is going to cross this pile of stones. Lavan kisses the grandchildren and goes back home. Yaakov continues his path back to Israel and he is greeted by angels. So our parsha begins with angels in Yaakov's dream and concludes with angels that come to greet Yaakov on his return to the land of Israel. Now let's see our parsha from the beginning. It's a very long parsha with a lot to discuss, so let's try to keep the pace going. Yes?
What do they mean by soft eyes or strained?
We'll see. We'll discuss that. There's a lot, Hashem, we'll discuss that. And if we don't, remind me. Okay? I have a question before we begin. Who over here learned Rashi on the parsha?
A little bit.
Okay, so our deal is as follows. Rashi is more important than anything else I could tell you. So if you know Rashi well, I could add all kinds of midrashim and other opinions in Chazal. If you don't know Rashi well, then I have to make sure you know Rashi well. Because Rashi is more important than the other opinions. Rashi is what your children will be learning. It's the first thing every Jew learns. The first thing we learn on Chumash is Rashi. So you have to know Rashi well. You guys have to decide if you're going to have the time and capacity to prepare with Rashi. Then there's a lot to discuss other than Rashi. But if not, then we have to do Rashi, because that's number one. So for this week, we'll do both as best as we can, but Rashi comes first. So Yaakov leaves Beersheba, and we are now switching focus. We will hardly talk about Yitzchak, now we talk about Yaakov. In the middle of last week's parasha, when Yaakov took the blessings, that's where the focus started shifting. And from here till Parshas Vayeshev, we focus on Yaakov. And from the middle of Vayishlach, and then from Vayeshev onward, we focus on the tribes, which leads us to the focus on the people of Israel. And the forefathers are described as Avram. The second letter in his name is Abayz. He instituted the prayer of the Boker, the morning Shachris. Yitzchak, the second letter in his name is Tzohorayim, the afternoon. He instituted the Mincha. And Yaakov, the second letter in his name is an Ayin. He instituted the Erev, the prayer of the night, the Ma'ariv.
Why the second letter?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a sign. So
it's the common thread. It's just a sign.
Yaakov is the forefather who will go to Galus. Yaakov is the one that contends with Lavan. Yaakov is the one who begins the exile into Egypt. Yaakov is the forefather who deals with the darkness of the night. Yaakov's nickname is Shemesh. He has a nickname of sun. That's his hidden name. But Yaakov has to contend with the times when God is not readily seen. And the truth is, Avram and Yitzhak also had to contend with such times. But Yaakov is the forefather who corresponds to the Jewish people in exile. And the verse says about Yaakov, "Al tirav di Yaakov," do not fear Yaakov. We sing all about Yaakov on Matzei Shabbos. Matzei Shabbos is when the average Jew finished his time. We have this bubble during the week where we can connect with God. And then comes Matzei Shabbos. The nature of a person is that now he's going to be down. It's like Monday morning in America, right? Monday morning, everyone's all depressed. There's, thank goodness it's Friday, and God help me, it's Monday, right? So by us, our Sunday is a work day, so it's God help me, it's Matzei Shabbos. What's going to be now? And so we begin our Matzei Shabbos with a reminder. First of all, we're different. Samavdil. Hashem, you separated us. Ben Kodesh Lechol, that which is holy and that which is mundane. Or Lechoshech, light and darkness. And then what? Yisrael Amim, Israel and the nations. We're going to try and take that light that we've encountered on Shabbos and carry it over through the week. But we recognize we're going to have to face all the challenges of the week. All the curses, the blasphemes that we hear all around us, be it the UN, be it the American president, be it wherever you go, you're going to encounter difficult news all week. On Shabbos, you're in a different world. You're with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Come the week, oh boy, now we're entering the stage of Galus. We're entering the darkness. We're not yet at a time of light. Avraham Yitzchak, that was a period of light. Yaakov corresponds to the Erev. Yaakov corresponds to the time of darkness, the Jew in exile. And so Yaakov is encouraged, as we remind ourselves every Matzei Shabbos, Al tira avdi Yaakov, don't be scared.
But the Jewish day starts in the Erev.
Right.
But the Galus isn't the way the Jewish people started.
Right.
Didn't
we start in Mitzrayim?
No, we started at Sinai.
Maybe. Bnei Yisrael is going down to Mitzrayim. But okay. So when we daven at night, our nighttime arvit corresponds to Yaakov. And our nighttime prayer corresponds to this period of exile when it's dark. When you have to remind yourself, God is with me. Yaakov is contending with this swindler who keeps cheating him. Cheats him on the most basic thing, on his wife. Can you guys imagine that? That's some father-in-law. He's not cheating him on, we made a deal. You said you'd give me a dozen eggs. You gave me 10 eggs. Oh, okay, I could live with that. You told me you'd give me her as a wife. You gave me her as a wife. What's going on here? You know, it doesn't get worse than that. That's some father-in-law. That's swindling. That's cheating. And when Yaakov wants to take him to court, he says, Lo yasechin bimkomenu. That's against the government here. You know, we have laws. We're people with a system. You're living here in my territory. And we don't do that here. You want, I'll get the lawyers. We'll fight it out in court. But you're not going to win. Because the custom here is that you don't give the elder before the younger. And anyways, you asked me for Rachel, I renamed her Rachel. You asked me for the little girl, she's the shorter girl. You asked me for my daughter, she's my daughter. So I worked it all out. In the town's hall, she's listed as Rachel. I switched her name. And she is the little one. So go prove it. What's Yaakov going to do? So he's contending with the swindler. He's contending with the challenges of Galus. He's contending with the challenges of being on someone else's territory. He does not have the home court advantage. He has the visitor's disadvantage, right?
This is Rachel, Rachel, my younger daughter.
Right.
Your younger daughter.
Right. And Lavan, he said, Rachel, your smaller daughter. He didn't say your younger daughter. Rachel bitchak tana. Yaakov said, I want Rachel, your smaller daughter. So Leah was a little shorter than Rachel. And so Rachel bitcha hakitana. Kitana means smaller. So our parsha is Vayetze. Yaakov goes out. And Yaakov has to go out and contend with the world. He prepares himself with 14 years of learning Torah. Between last week's parsha and this week's parsha, he spent 14 years hidden in a Beis Medrash learning. That's the best preparation a person can do for life.
Shame and
Aver? Shame and
Aver, yeah. Who's Aver?
Shem's grandson. Bnei Shem, Elam v'Ashur v'Al Pachshad v'Lud v'Aram. It says over there, right there. It says he's his grandson. He's Shem's grandson. Yaakov leaves because there's a threat in Israel, and one of the things we learn from the forefathers is that they were great believers and they were very practical. They knew that if it's dangerous here, we leave, we run. Avraham Avinu, when there's a famine and it reaches a point where he can't make it work, he leaves. Yaakov Avinu has a threat here in Israel, he leaves. Vayetze Yaakov, as difficult as it is to be in Chutzar, it's as difficult as it is to be away from the family, he needs a shidduch, he needs to stay alive, he leaves. Chazal tell us an intelligent person knows how to run. And the difference between intelligent and unintelligent, Chazal say, is whether you demand what time will give you, or you let time demand of you what time will give you. Meaning, Chazal say, a person who is dochek et hasha'ah, He says, I will do it now. I don't care if it makes sense or not. I want it now. Well, if you're going to try to demand it now, you're going to push your way through. Sometimes it explodes and a person even gets killed because he tries to get what he wants now. A person has to try and sometimes see that he's better off waiting a little bit. Wait, now's not the time. I will not succeed now. If I walk into my boss after he just lost half his fortune and the stock market crashed, and I have every reason why I need a raise now. My wife just gave birth, my car just broke down, my rent just went up, and I'm the top candidate here for a raise. The company couldn't last without me. But my boss is very ticked off, you know. All his stocks just crashed. It's not a very smart thing to do. I might be in the right, but the timing isn't right. And Chazal tells us a person has to gauge the timing. Lecha mi bo v'chaderecha, the Navi tells the Jewish people, go to your rooms, chaviki matrega. Wait a minute. Calm down. You don't have to win now. You have to know how to hide a little bit till the right moment comes. And when the right moment comes, you can succeed. So Yaakov is going to inherit all of the land of Israel, but not now. Right now, it's dangerous to stay around here. So Yaakov packs his bags and runs. Chazal say, kol anitchem ipnei hashah, whoever is willing to detain himself because the timing isn't right. So for in the end, he will conquer the time. V'kol she'no nidchem mipnei hasha'ah, and whoever is not willing to take timing into account, he says, I'm in the right, so what if it's not a good timing, but I'm right. Well, you could be right and lose. He will not be successful. A person has to know it's not only about what's right, it's also about the timing. Right now is the time for Yaakov to run. We described last week why Yaakov did nothing wrong. He was in keeping with his contract with Esav. But Esav has a sword, and Esav has his men, and Esav is ready to kill. So Yaakov believes fully that Hashem runs the world, and that Hashem gave him the capacity to protect himself and get up and run. And that's what Yaakov does. He runs. People sometimes confuse being a believer with doing ishtadlus. People say, if I'm a believer, so if I'm meant to die, I'll die. No. Maybe you're meant to run and ensure you'll stay alive. And God says, you'll take good care of yourself, you'll live. You don't take good care of yourself, you'll die. Yes, I run the show and I gave you the capacity to take care of yourself. So take care of yourself. You see, that's what Yaakov does. He leaves. Vayifga b'makom, and Yaakov meets up with a spectacular place. What's this place? This is the Temple Mount. And God says, he's passing through my place and he doesn't realize it. Let him stick around. There's something here that has to happen. Yaakov has to have a vision of the future of the people. Just as Avram was given a vision, the Brit Ben Abtarim, so too Yaakov is going to have a vision. And Yaakov collects 12 stones and puts them under his head. And that night, the 12 stones unite into one. He is being given a revelation that the 12 tribes coming from him will unite, just as there are 12 constellations in the zodiac, just as there are 12 strengths that can be taken in this planet. His 12 children, each one is going to represent a different strength, each one is going to represent a different way in the service of Hashem, and each one is going to be a part of a greater whole, that is the 12 rocks uniting. And Yaakov goes to sleep and he sees a vision. The Pasuk describes it as a ladder on which angels climb. Well, angels don't need a ladder to get anywhere. Angels don't need wings to get anywhere. The wings have a different meaning, and the ladder has a different meaning. And Chazal tell us great depth in this vision, whether the sulam, which is the numerical value of Sinai, is an allusion to Sinai, whether the sulam is an allusion to the Mizbeach, whether the sulam is an allusion to the temple that was yet to come. Chazal have multiple interpretations in this vision. And Chazal tell us that Yaakov sees the angels going up and coming down. He sees the angels that went to overturn Sodom that sinned going up. He sees the other angels coming down. He sees the angels of Israel that accompanied him till here going up. He sees the angels of Chutzlaretz coming down. There are different levels of Hashgacha Pratit, different levels of Hashem being a part of a person's life. When a person's in Israel, Hashem is more a part of his life. When a person is in Shabbos, Hashem is more a part of a person's life. We say that there are two angels that accompany a person on every single day. When the public is in mourning, if a person partakes of that mourning, then the two angels that accompany him say, you so-and-so partook of the public's pain, may he merit to see when things go better. If a person does not partake of that mourning, so then the two angels that accompany a person put their hands on his head and they say, he didn't care when the public was suffering, he should not merit to see when things go better. We see there are two angels that accompany every person. In ancient times when people were holier, they recognized those angels. When they'd go into the bathroom, they'd say, my dear angels, I apologize, I know you won't accompany me when I go in here, but I'm human, this is what I got to do. People used to actually refer to the angels. There's a special saying people used to say before entering a bathroom. We have no concept of the angels that accompany us, but they do. And there are different levels of Ashgacha. There's the Ashgacha of the land of Israel, and then there's a lesser Ashgacha in Chutzarts. So the angels that accompanied him till here, well, he's going to Chutzarts, they're going up. The new angels are going to accompany him to Chutzarts. On Shabbos, we say Shalom Aleichem, we welcome the angels of Shabbos. Those are the special angels. It's different than the angels of the weekday. So Yaakov Avinu is lying down and he sees this tremendous vision. And he sees the angel, another pshat, he sees the angel that represents the Babylonian Empire. And he sees it go up a number of rungs and then come down. He sees the angel that represents the Persian Mede Empire, the Greek Empire. Each angel goes up a certain number of notches on the ladder, which represent the number of years they will take control over his children, over the people of Israel, and then come down. And finally, he sees the angel that represents his brother. That's the man he's been running from. That's the man that wants him dead. That's the clear and present danger. And that angel goes up the ladder and continues going up. And God says to Yaakov, go take him down. And Yaakov's scared. Yaakov does not. And the angel keeps going up. And Yaakov turns to God and says, I don't see him coming down, God. What's going to be? Is Esav going to last forever? Is he going to win? That's Yaakov's fear at this time. And God says, no. But I'm going to have to take him down. The difficulties of the period under Edom is the difficulty that Edom thinks he's eternal, and we are sometimes misled, just like Yaakov Avinu. We see their continued success. We also ask ourselves, are they always going to be powerful? And that's the vision that Yaakov sees. Ultimately, God says, I will take him down. So Yaakov sees this vision. We have multiple interpretations as to what he's seeing. And Hashem tells him, I am with you. Our sages say, as Yaakov lay down over there, God came down to protect him. What's God protecting him from? From the angels up above. There's a vision of Yaakov up above. Our sages say that the verse in Yechezkel describes God's chariot. God's chariot has wheels that turn in all four directions. And in each direction there's a face. There's the face of the ox. There's the face of the eagle. There's the face of a human. What's the face of the human? The face of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu's face is up on God's chariot. The angels go up, they see God, his face up there. They go down, they see Yaakov's face. They see Yaakov lying down to sleep. They say, God, he belongs up here? How could he belong up here if he's sleeping? He's wasting time, he's sleeping? They're ready to kill him. God goes down and protects him. Throughout the Tanakh, when we have a person's name said twice, Avraham, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yaakov, Moshe, Moshe, there's always a break between the two names. And that break represents the difference between a person's potential and who a person is. All of us have a potential, and the human being doesn't make it to his potential. Every person has a potential, and no one other than Moshe Rabbeinu reached that potential, including Avram, including Yitzchak. That's why when the pasuk says Avraham, Avraham, there's a break. There's that line that represents the break between Avraham and Avram. There was the Avram, the potential. There was Avram, who he was. He didn't reach his full potential. Yaakov, Yaakov, when Hashem calls him out, we'll see a break in between the two times Hashem says his name. There's the potential Yaakov, and as great as Yaakov is, greater than Moshe Rabbeinu in certain ways, he doesn't reach his potential. Every one of us has a responsibility to try. But we shouldn't be so down on ourselves if we didn't make it. Avram didn't make it. Yaakov didn't make it. We have to do the best we can. One person in history made it, as far as we know. Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, Moshe, there's no break in between. Yes?
He didn't make it into the Holy Land.
Just one second.
Just a vague question, but also to Esav, there's a whole lot of potential.
What?
To Esav also, like to Edom, there's a whole lot of potential.
Yeah, wherever there's bad, there's potential for good. Yeah. Yeah. Amichai.
I was saying, because even Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't make it into the Holy Land.
Okay. No, we didn't say he was perfect, right? But he did tshuva. He did what he could. To reach our potential doesn't mean not to err, but to fix our errors.
I was kind of leading on the point where you're saying, like, if you ever feel like, you know, it's not saying good enough, even like Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah. You're right, you're right. It's a good point. Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's discuss that tomorrow night, okay? So, Hashem makes him a promise. He sees a vision of prophecy. Maimonides writes that when there's a prophecy for good, then Hashem doesn't take it back. When there's a prophecy for bad, then sometimes if the people do tshuva, Hashem will take it back. And nonetheless, Yaakov does not have faith in this prophecy, for Yaakov says, if Hashem really stands by me and keeps everything He promised me, and everything turns out as good as Hashem says, then I will make this dedication. What was Yaakov worried about? This rule that we say that a prophecy for good is never undone, that's a rule for a prophecy for good that is given over unto others. But here this was private between Hashem and Yaakov Avinu. The idea that Hashem does not take back a prophecy for good is so that we could check if a prophet is telling us the truth or not. If God could always undo a prophecy, so then you'd never have a check on the prophet. Anytime his prophecy didn't come true, he'd say, yeah, God changes his mind. So we have this rule. Any prophecy that's given over to humanity, if it's a prophecy for bad, like Jonah's prophecy to Nineveh, that they'll be overturned, well, when they repented, so God took it back. So that can be undone. But a prophecy for something good, God says anything good I told people would happen, I never take it back. And that's a way you could check a prophet. That's all true when the prophet is saying it over onto others. So you need to have this check. What about a prophecy that's private? He's not telling it to anyone else. God tells Yaakov, I will be with you. That's provided that you, Yaakov, live up to your end of the deal and you're deserving of it. And Yaakov is well aware of that. So Yaakov says, if it really works out and I make it back and everything works out the way God promised, then I will set up a place of worship to Hashem, and I will give a tithe to you. What does it mean, a tithe to you? Asera aslenu lach, a tithe to you means I'll give a tithe to charity. Chazal say the poor are, so to speak, God's hand in this world. When we give the poor, it says, no, I'm giving God's people. God says, they're my men. The ger, the yosom, the almana, the poor, Hashem says, they're my representation, so to speak, in the world. God says, I look after them. If you look after them, so now you're taking care of the people that are important to me. Yaakov is in awe. He says, what an amazing place this is. This is the house of heaven. Yaakov has seen the Temple Mount. We say there's a Yerushalayim Shel Mala and Yerushalayim Shel Mata. There's a Jerusalem in the heavens corresponding to the Jerusalem down below. The verse says, Yerushalayim HaBenuya Kiir Shechubra LaYachdav. The built Jerusalem is like its counterpart Jerusalem. So the sage is saying, Gemara Tanis, what's the counterpart Jerusalem? There's a Jerusalem up in heaven, and God says, I will not enter my Jerusalem in heaven until you guys finish building the Jerusalem down below. Uva Litzion Goel, we say every day. Uva Litzion Goel, says Rashi on that pasuk in Isaiah. The Redeemer ain't coming till Zion is rebuilt. People sometimes think it's going to come down from heaven. Yeah, the temple might come down from heaven. But what about the rest of Zion? What about the rest of Israel? So the verse says, the Redeemer will come to a built Zion. Uva Litzion Goel. The Redeemer will come to Zion when it's rebuilt. We have a job to build here in Israel. Baruch Hashem, we're building. If you think the Redeemer is going to walk in, he's going to build Zion, tells you Rashi on that pasuk in Isaiah. No, you build. And then, so we have a tremendous place. We have the Temple Mount. And on the Temple Mount, we have the Evan Ashtia. The Evan Ashtia is the rock from which God began building earth, meaning earth is circular. It's round. Where do you begin earth? You have a circle. You want to make Greenwich Mean Time. Where at every moment, there's some place on earth where it's sunset and some place on earth where it's sunrise. How do you know where the international dateline is? So we decided, based on Greenwich Mean Time, how does Judaism decide? Where's the international dateline? So Judaism says that the earth started being created on the Temple Mount. God started with the holiest place. Everything else was formed around that. That's the Evin HaShisiya, the rock, which is the foundation for everything else. They say that's the rock that's under the Dome of the Rock. I don't know. There's this tremendous rock over there, and that's the Evin HaShisiya, the rock from which, that's the foundation of all of earth, when God started creating earth. So Yaakov Avinu is sleeping up there on the Temple Mount. He puts his head down on that, and God says, and that over there where you're sleeping, you should know, I'm going to give you that place where you're sleeping. Well, he's sleeping at the upper pinnacle, the apex of earth. Everything goes down from there. Meaning, we're used to looking at the globe with the north being on top, with everything turning. Yeah, that's accurate vis-a-vis the sun. But you know, that's Einstein relativity, what's top, what's bottom, what's up, what's down, what's north, right? All of that is relative, depends on what perspective you're looking at it. God tells us from His perspective, the top of the globe is Jerusalem, the Temple Mount.
Were you going to, you said you were going to explain why people used to think that the earth was flat, that was one
up? I don't think so. Okay. Yaakov wakes up in the morning and the stone that he put around him, the 12 stones, became one. And he names the place Beit El. And he takes that famous vow. And he starts walking. He's going to his uncle. And God made the sun set early, so the shepherds are a little worried. Maybe the sun will set early today too. So they gather their sheep early. And Yaakov comes there and he sees the shepherds gathered around the well. And he says, brothers, where are you from? They tell him they're from Haran. He asks them, do they know Laban? They say, yeah, and there's Rachel, his daughter, coming with the sheep. Why is she going out with the sheep? Because Rachel's eyes are soft. They can't take the wind against them. One understanding is that they were soft because they couldn't handle the wind. She had, everything was beautiful about her. Some even say, Enei Lea Rakot, her eyes were soft, meaning she was even more beautiful than Rachel. Enei Lea Rakot, her eyes were soft. She always heard there are twins in Israel and twins out in Haran. Cousins. These families have always been marrying. Abraham married from this family, Yitzhak married from this family, and Yaakov's going to come and get his shidduch from this family. Well, if there are twin brothers and twin sisters, so the older girl's going to go to the older boy, and the younger girl's going to go to the younger boy. Not only that, they're twin brothers, twin sisters. Rachel and Leah are twins. Yaakov and Esav are twins. So Leah, throughout her life, hears that she's going to marry Esav, and she weeps, and she cries, and her eyes get soft from it, and Rachel is all pretty. She's going to marry Yaakov. What happens on that fateful night of the marriage? Leah goes in to marry Yaakov. And Esav, back in Israel, hears that Leah married Yaakov, and Esav starts to laugh. He says, I heard the younger one was prettier. Esav says, good thing, I wanted the younger one anyways. That's why in next week's parasha, when they come to meet Esav, Binyamin and everyone's all, Yosef and everyone's all nervous, maybe Esav's going to want to walk off with Rachel. Because Esav feels, you know, you took the older one, so I'm entitled to the younger one. Yaakov is in Laban's house for a month and then for 7 years. And yet Yaakov does not know Rachel's voice. We see the modesty of Yaakov and Rachel. He's perceived, she's a kind person, she's a good person, he wants her as a wife, but he doesn't know her voice. You guys get what that means? The first night of marriage, it could be Leah in bed and he doesn't know. That's how modest Yaakov was. That's the tzaddik that Yaakov is. It's understandable. I mean, the man's 77 by the time he's marrying her. But he's a big tzaddik. The girls are also big tzaddikot because they're marrying a man who's a few decades their senior. But they realize what it means to marry Yaakov Avinu, what it means to be the future of humanity. This is the moment they've been waiting for. And so the time comes, Yaakov walks into Haran, and he meets up with Rachel. We see Yaakov's strength. We're going to see throughout the parashios that Yaakov and his children have extraordinary strength, unusual strength. They're bigger than we can imagine. They're ready to take on whole towns, as we'll see in next week's parsha. They take on a whole city and they kill them all, and they're ready to take on more. They're extraordinarily powerful. Chazal tell us God made certain things with extra might in the world, and each one God made his antidote. Well, God, the Torah, the Talmud says the Jewish people are one of those extra strong things that can destroy the whole world, and the only antidote to the Jewish people is the Torah. If not for the Torah, then you could forget about the world. We'd be destroying the whole planet. That's what the Gemara says. So Yaakov comes in, and it takes a whole bunch of shepherds to take that stone off the well. But Yaakov walks over, and with one hand, he knocks off the stone, and he walks over to Rachel, and he takes care of her sheep. And
they didn't talk at all.
Well, maybe they spoke, not to the point where he would recognize her voice. You know, on the first date, you don't learn a person's voice after a few times. And when they talk, he tells her, look, this is what I'm about. This is what my family's about. This is what the future, I think. And he tells her there are three mitzvos that are the wife's responsibility in the home. Rashi Tevos, Chana, Chala, Nida, Adlakas, Aner. Are you ready to take care of that? Chala, the idea that when we make bread, the first thing of the most basic sustenance. What's the basic staple in a home? Bread. The most basic thing we first give to God. We give to God's representation. Nida, the idea of family purity. It's not just about when a couple wants to be together. There's holiness even in that act. Not even. That act can be the most holy thing in the home. And Hadlakas Aner, we light a candle in honor of Shabbos, the capacity to sanctify time. He teaches her those three mitzvahs of a Jewish home. And he tells her, under the chuppah, when I talk to your father, when we come to get married, I'm going to ask you this question. what's your job? And you're going to have to answer me. Chal ani d'adlok saner. He gives her a secret sign. He tells her, I'm going to want to marry you. And Rachel says, wait a second, Yaakov. There's a rule here, and I know my father, and he's going to try to trick you. So Yaakov says, don't worry. I'm as good a swindler as him. I'll take care of him. And when he comes to make a deal with Lavan, he tells Lavan, I want to marry your daughter, Rachel, the little one. Rachel, your little daughter. And he figures, I got her all covered. If I just say Rachel, he'll bring me a Rachel from the market. If I say your daughter, he'll bring me another daughter. If I say Rachel, your daughter, he'll rename Leah Rachel, or he'll rename one of the maid's girls Rachel, and he'll say, that's Rachel, my daughter. So I'll tell him, Rachel, your little daughter, and I've got it all covered. No, he didn't. Here we see two interesting points. A, very often we think we can undo a swindler. You touch a swindler, you're apt to get harmed. B, Rachel was right. Very often the wife tells her husband, no, don't do that. Smart husband listens to his wife. Yaakov figured he's gonna get it right, and he paid a hefty price. Now in heavens, they're looking down, and the day comes. Rachel's been waiting her whole life for this day. 7 years she's been living in this house, knowing she's going to marry this fine young man. Her whole future is contingent on this day. And then it comes time to go into the chuppah, and her dad comes into the room and says, Rachel, you're staying here. Leah, you come with me. What's Rachel supposed to do? And her mind starts racing. Wait a second. Oh, she knows what she's doing. 14. What am I going to do? She's 14, 15, 22. She's not a little girl. Rachel's mind starts racing. Her whole future is standing here. But in a minute, her sister is going to stand under the chuppah, and Yaakov is going to ask her for the signs, and she's not going to know. And then her sister is going to be embarrassed. And so Rachel makes a decision. Rachel says, I know I'm hereby losing or risking losing my whole future, but I will not let my sister be embarrassed. And so she tells Leah, these are the three mitzvahs Yaakov's going to ask you under the chuppah. And that night, throughout the night, Yaakov keeps talking to her and calling her Rachel, and she answers. And Lavan makes the lights dim, and he brings in a whole bunch of guests, and everyone in town knows what's going on. And they all start singing, Hilea, 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 Hilea. And they're hinting to him, he Leah, she's Leah. But they make it like a la 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 la, so he doesn't hear it. And the next morning he suddenly realizes, hey, that's what they were all telling me, he Leah, it's Leah. Sfardim have a custom that till today they sing a song like that at their weddings. Hilea, Hilea, Hilea. The next morning, the next morning, he sees it's Leah. So he says, wait, I understand Rachel. She's a tzedekes, but I don't understand you. All night long I call you Rachel and you answer yes. And now I call you Leah and you answer yes. So Leah says, you don't think you have students in the world? Yaakov says, what do you mean? She says, well, when you came here, you sat down with us for supper and you told my father the whole story of how your father wanted to bless, and you walked in and your father said Esav and you said yes, and you answer to your big brother's name sometimes, right? So what's so terrible if I do that too? You tricked your father, so I learned from you.
Whoa.
Pretty sharp answer.
Is this in the Midrash or is it in the...
It's in the Midrash. So, God sees what's going on, and God sees that Leah has been davening for years that she wants to marry Yaakov, and has been davening for years not to become Esav's wife, has been davening for years that this is what she wants. And you know what? Leah is the power of prayer. Originally in heaven, it was decreed that Leah would be married to Esav, and Rachel would be Yaakov's wife. And in Leah's prayers, she succeeded not only to marry Yaakov, but she came first. Not only to marry Yaakov first, but to be the prime wife of Yaakov. Not only to be the prime wife of Yaakov, that she has 6 of the children out of 12, but that it is her children that are the leaders of the Jewish people, the Kohanim, the Levim, the kings. The future of the Jewish people is in Leah. Rachel's children, Mashiach ben Yosef, but not Mashiach ben David. Rachel's children, the first king, Shaul, but not David, not the Davidic dynasty. Leah is the future of the Jewish people because Leah had the strength of tefillah. and that strength, that capacity to daven, changes her whole future and the future of the Jewish people. In heaven, Rachel was supposed to be Yaakov's wife. Chazal tell us when a person is offered a shidduch, he has to take it seriously. Because if someone else davens hard enough, they could end up marrying that girl and not that person. Meaning, yes, in heaven they've decided who's going to marry whom. That's true. But if you daven hard enough, you could change it. So Chazal say, if you're offered a shidduch, could be it's Tisha B'Av, don't take it lightly. Go take care of it. Because you never know. You never know. Things can change in heaven when a person davens. And that is the strength of Leah. That's why David, who composed Tehillim, comes from Leah. That's why Yehuda. That's why we have Daniel. We have the great people of prayer come from Leah. Yes?
Well, this morning, when I was learning about the Parsha, I was told that Leah would have had all these children anyway. She just would have had them by Esav if he had done the Jew what he was supposed to do. And
maybe.
And gotten his inheritance in the Jewish people. So, I mean, is it the prayers? It's in combination of both? Is it something that was always going to happen?
I don't know. What I said is a medrash. More than that, I don't know. Meaning, to say more than the medrash says about what happens in heaven is not my job. I don't know.
What happened in heaven? Just like, but Esav, but like, presumably Esav could have, if he had done what he was supposed to do, he would have been a patriarch. He would have been counted. Right?
I don't know. I don't know the if then. Whatever the medrash tells me, I know what the medrash doesn't say. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but it's an interesting thing I learned. I don't know where the source for this is, but that Esav, because he was born with an evil nature, and his job was to overcome it.
Right.
And but of course, he failed miserably. And what happens later is Yaakov doesn't really realize how much he actually can appreciate that. But after he beats Esav's guardian angel, and then his view of her changes, because at that point. He overcomes he takes over that aspect of Esav of having conquered the evil inclination, which I realize when you take the gematrias of his two names, Israel and Yaakov, you subtract, 541 and 182, you're left with 359, which is Shin Tav Nun, interestingly enough. And so he actually, he does what he did, in that sense, he does what Esav was supposed to do, and then as a result of that, because in that way Leah does marry who she's supposed to marry from the get-go.
Okay. Lavan tells him. What? Lavan tells him, we're waiting. I'm waiting to be sitting in the audience and hearing Simcha. I agree with you guys. Give it a few years, okay. The sooner the better. Lavan tells Yaakov, you know, you came before the seven. Yeah, I understood what you meant. Lavan tells Yaakov, wait, let's finish the 7 days of Leah's party, and then we'll go on to Rachel. What happened was that Yaakov came before the 7 years were fully up. He figured, you get married, you have 7 days Sheva Brachos. So he said, you know, that can happen on my 7 years. That could be the conclusion of the 7 years. Lavan tells Yaakov, okay, now let's finish the 7 days of partying. Lavan wants it to be abundantly clear that the first 7 years are up. And then, when Yaakov marries Rachel, it's very clear that if they agree to 7 years, Yaakov can't claim those were the past 7 years because those years were up. Then you can marry Rachel when it's very clear that you're going to work another 7 years.
What do you do for him, shepherd?
Yep. So Yaakov becomes a shepherd for another 7 years. So here we see the concept of Sheva Brachos. We have many concepts that are not biblical or concepts that were instituted later on by Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet we find these concepts earlier in the Torah. People are sometimes bothered by that. We have no problem with that. Like Maimonides writes, like Nachmanides writes. Very often the Torah took a concept that existed and explained to us what's the proper way to do it. Not everything that the world does without the Torah is wrong. There are certain customs that the world had, like honoring the firstborn, like giving the firstborn a double portion. There are customs that existed. What? There are concepts that existed prior to the Torah, that the Torah came and said, this is the right way to do it. We can also understand it based on the Midrash that says that before the Torah was given, God sent the Torah before the flood to tell the world, this is how I want humanity to function. And it's a very viable option that whatever God was teaching the world before the Torah was given was something along the lines of the Torah that we have today. We have also a Midrash that says that God offered the Torah to Yishmael and Esav before he offered it to us. So the Maimonides says God sent a prophet to these nations and offered them his Torah. So it's a viable option. They adopted it. We also have the idea that Avram and Yitzchak taught the world Torah. They attained an understanding naturally, meaning their own nature taught them to behave the way the Torah teaches us. We read the Torah, it seems foreign to us because we're so distant from the nature of the planet. Avram and Yitzchak, their own nature went in line with the way of the Torah. So if they were teaching and they went in line with the Torah, it's very possible that they were teaching everyone, just as they were teaching people, on these days you eat matzah. What are you eating matzah for? The Jews haven't even gone into Egypt. They haven't left Egypt. What are you eating matzah for? Yes, the matzah that we eat is because we left Egypt, etc. But there is, if you can tap into the nature of the world, there is a natural reason why every person should be eating matzah on these days. We don't understand it. If we could tap into the nature of the world as Avram and Yitzchak did, it would make sense to us. To us, it's all about the time we were in Egypt. But we see from the Torah that there's much more to it than that. So yes, there was a custom that people celebrated 7 days with a chasen. There was a custom of 7 days of mourning. And all of this the Torah adopted and taught us how to do it in a Jewish way. Yes?
So you're saying that our Yom Tovim...
I said adopted, I meant adapted. Yeah.
Okay, so are you saying that our Yom Tovim falls on a very cosmic important date?
No. Saying that God created the cosmic important dates based on the Torah, like Chazal tell us, Istaga Borais Ovar Alma.
If you say that Torah, a kind of Torah was given before the Mabul, and if Matzah was important, and only after we went to Mitzrayim, and there was the Yetzet Mitzrayim, so it seems that this important cosmic date...
Did you understand what I told you?
I understand.
Maybe you understand. Maybe. So let's talk about tomorrow, okay? Back to our parsha. So, they spend the week, and then he marries Rachel. And ordinarily, Chazal tell us that a person's first wife is the one he prefers. The Gemara has a whole long list of explanations about the importance of a person's first wife. That there's nothing like it. The Gemara at the end of the first, the end of the second parak of Sanhedrin, goes through a whole long list that there's nothing like a first wife. Nothing can come close to it. A person, the Gemara brings many psukim to back this concept. But at the end of the day, Yaakov loves Rachel more, and Hashem knew that Leah meant well and that Leah just wanted to do God's will in everything she did. And so Hashem took a hand in everything that was happening. So Hashem had Leah get pregnant right away. Ordinarily, a woman doesn't get pregnant from the first night she's with her husband. Leah does. And now Yaakov is contemplating divorce, and he sees Leah's pregnant in an unnatural way. So he says, how could I divorce the mother of my kids? My kids are going to grow up in a single-parent home. And so they stay married, and Yaakov loves her. He loves Rachel more, but he loves her. And she senses that he loves her more. Chazal say, "Eni shamit kanala b'yerech chaverta." A woman is most jealous of another woman. So to have two women in a home is very difficult. Even Rachel, when she speaks to God, says, "I took in my nemesis into my home. You love her, she's your sister, you're a tzaddikus, she's a tzaddikus." It's still hard. At the end of the day, two wives in one home isn't easy. Even if they're sisters, and even if she brought her into the home. We see Leah's tzidkus, we see how Leah names her children, revolving around God and her husband. Reuven, Hashem saw my plight. Shimon, Hashem heard my prayer. Levi, my husband will be with me. Reuven, Shimon in honor of Hashem, Levi in honor of her husband, Yehuda back to thanking Hashem. Leah is focused on Hashem. Leah is constantly praying to Hashem. Leah has prophecy. She's one of the prophetesses, and she sees that her son Reuven is uniquely different than Esav. Esav was supposed to be her husband. Esav willingly gave his rights to the firstborn. And what does Esav say after he willingly gave his rights? I will murder my brother. Reuven had his little brother Yosef, Rachel's first son, snitch on him. Tell Jacob that Reuven is the one that messed around with the beds. No one else told Yaakov. Who told Yaakov? Yosef. And yet, when Reuven lost his rights to the firstborn as a result of what Yosef said about him, and his rights to the firstborn were given against his will to his little brother Yosef, who snitched on him, a few days later, or a few weeks later, Yosef is thrown into the pit. The brothers say, let's kill him. And Reuven says, no, put him in the pit. And Reuven wants to save his life. What's the difference between Reuven and Esav? Esav willingly gives the rights to the firstborn, and he's ready to kill the brother he gave it to. Reuven has it taken from him by force, given to the same brother who snitched on him, and he does every effort in the world to save his life. Reuven, look at this son. Look at the difference between Reuven and Esav. Leah has four children. She is the first one to thank Hashem, Yehuda. She sees, she has a vision of prophecy that Yehuda will be modeh. He will admit to his part in getting Tamar pregnant. And Yehuda corresponds to both Odeh and Hashem. Yehuda has God's name, and it also has the term of thanks. Rachel sees she can't have kids. She comes to Yaakov and says, if I don't have kids, I'm dead. Life is not only about a pulse. Life is about the capacity to have influence. If a person has his own source of sustenance, he is alive. If a person has to rely on someone else for sustenance, he is dead. That's why a poor person is called dead. A stream that has its own source is called Be'er Maim Chayim. A well that has its own source is a living well. A human being that can support himself is called living. Sonim Atanot, one who hates gifts, is Yichyeh, is considered like he's alive. A person who has no children has far less capacity to impact the world. Person who has no money has far less capacity to impact the world. These are people who biblically are considered like they're dead. Ani chashuv kemit. Mishen lo banim chashuv kemit. Person who has no children, a person who has no money. In Tanakh, they are sometimes referred to as though they're dead. And so, Rachel comes to Yaakov and says, give me kids, otherwise I'm not alive. And Yaakov says, wait a second, what do you want from me? I don't run the show here. And Chazal say, in heavens, they took Yaakov to task over that. In Shemayim, they were very upset at Yaakov. Is this how you answer a barren woman? The poor woman is suffering. She sees her sister having kids. She wants to have kids. She comes and begs. Now, if you look at the story, listen to what Rachel tells Yaakov. Rachel comes to Yaakov and says, Hava li panim, give me kids. V'imayin metanochi, and if not, I'm dead. She's being very melodramatic. What does Yaakov answer her? Am I God? You want me to solve this problem? Talk to him. He made you not have kids. Sounds like a pretty fair conversation. And yet Chazal say Yaakov shouldn't have answered her that way. But she's the one that started. She's the one that came with claims. The Gemara brings that Rav Yehuda was teaching his son Rav Yitzchak. He taught him a person has pleasure, a person can only have peace of mind with his first wife. So his son asked him, can you give me an example, Dad? So Rav Yehuda said, yeah, your mother. So the Gemara says, really? But Rav Yehuda himself said, when he was learning with his son, I find the woman more bitter than death, King Solomon said. His son said, Dad, could you give me an example? So Rav Yehuda said, yeah, your mother. So the Gemara says, well, which one is it? Here he's telling his son, a man never has peace of mind. He never can have tranquility unless it's his first wife. And he tells him, your mother's like that. And yet he tells him that his mother is the woman who's more bitter than death. So the Gemara says, yes, it's both. They're not contradictory. On the one hand, she can be tough as nails with him. She could yell at him. She's got everything in the world to say. Okay, but on the other hand, they can still forge a relationship that no other relationship can compete. So part of marriage is also that give and take where she's coming and she's very upset. And Yaakov Avinu over here should have been more sensitive to what's driving her. And as we discussed last week, and we've discussed numerous times, obviously these are nuances. We speak about it simply, but Yaakov is far greater than we can even imagine. But we speak about it in our terminology. So Rachel tells him she wants him to marry the maid. Now, who are these maids? So Lavan had Pilagshim, women who were married to him only in a semi-contract, meaning he didn't owe that much money to their wives. It wasn't a full marriage. What's called, I think, in English, a concubine. And he had daughters from those women, and those daughters were called maids, and he gave them as maids to his prime daughters, Rachel and Leah. But really, they were also their stepsisters. And Rachel told Yaakov, I want you to marry her. She'll have kids and that'll be my continuation. According to some of the commentaries, that's what she wanted all along when she came to Yaakov and said, give me kids. Yaakov didn't let her finish her sentence. Yaakov automatically thought she wants him to give her kids, her own kids. Yaakov says, what do you want from me? Why'd you cut her off? Listen to her. So she's yelling at you, but 1 second, she had a different point in mind. Her point was, come marry the maid. And he does. And she names the first son Dun. She says, this is judgment. This shows that I'm not as pious as my sister Leah. Because with her, I could have kids with the maid. But I can't have my own kids, meaning I still have some fixing to do. I am not what I should be. So Rachel's maid has two kids, and Leah's maid has two kids. And then we're up to a point where Leah becomes pregnant after Leah's had six. Each of the maids have had two. Yaakov has 10 children, and Leah gets pregnant. Now, Leah's a little bit concerned because Leah says, if I have a boy now, I will have a seventh boy. And we have on tradition there are only going to be 12 tribes. If we have 12 tribes, and I have seven, and each of the maids have two, that brings us to 11. Rachel is only left with the capacity to have one. And then Rachel will be less than the maids in the family. And so she stands and prays and begs Hashem, make it into a girl. And even though ordinarily our sages say that up until 40 days after conception, a person can pray whether it'll be a boy or a girl because it's not yet defined. After 40 days, it doesn't change. Leah's praying after 40 days. Our sages say, yeah, when a person is as big a tzaddik as Leah, they can pray after 40 days. And so Dina, that girl who was supposed to be a boy, in Leah's prayer turns into a girl. But that's why she has a little bit male tendencies. That's why we'll see in next week's parasha. She's not so comfortable sitting around the house. She's a tomboy. She's outside. Because the genetic makeup, initially she was supposed to be a boy. Leah prayed, so by
lot. She has nine brothers.
Okay, nine brothers, but she also has 11 sisters. So with every son that was born, a twin sister was born. Maybe that's why they were born prematurely. Every one of these kids was a preemie. Every one of the tribes was born after 7 months. And that's how they got so many kids into 7 years. What?
They're all premature and are so like...
Right? They were all premature. They were all born at 7 months. So Leah gets together the other two wives and they all start praying, all three together with Rachel, obviously. They all start praying that Rachel should have children. And when all of them are praying and begging Hashem for Rachel to conceive, finally Rachel conceives. And Rachel has her first child named Yosef. And when Yosef is born, the family is different. The 14 years are up. And Yaakov senses that now he has the strength to take on Esau. Now he's ready to go back. Yaakov comes to Lavan, and Lavan makes a deal with him.
Yosef was born in Lavan's house?
Correct. Yosef was born at the conclusion of the 14 years. Yaakov comes to Lavan and says, time to go, I finished my 14 years. Lavan says, I know that because you came, I've been blessed. Our sages say it's true. Lavan's right. When a person takes a tzaddik into his home, then blessing comes on the home. When Yaakov first came to visit Lavan, he had no boys. It was his girls taking care of the sheep. Now, after Yaakov's been there for 14 years, he has sons taking care of the sheep. Because that's part of the blessing that came along with Yaakov. Before Yaakov came, Lavan's sheep were all plagued and dying. Yaakov comes in, takes care of the sheep, and they're healthy, and they're standing, and they're sturdy, and Lavan's a very wealthy man. Lavan realizes all this came because I had Yaakov in my home. I don't want this amulet to go. So he tells Yaakov, you know, I checked with all my different idols, and they all come up, you know, all my lots and everything come up with one answer. You're the source of my blessing in my life. You can't leave me. I want you to stick around. Yaakov, what?
Another 7 years.
They don't say how much time. So Yaakov, so Lavan says, tell me what salary do you want? Yaakov says, you know, I've worked very hard for you. And you know how much wealth you've gained and how much blessing you got because I've been taking care of your animals. But I got to make something for my family too. Yaakov's already 84 years old. When's he gonna make some money for himself and his kids? So Lavan says, okay, tell me what do you want? So Yaakov says, I don't want you to give me anything. Yaakov knows that Lavan doesn't like parting with his money. So Yaakov says, here's the deal. All the sheep that come out spotted and brown from now on will be mine. According to some commentaries, Yaakov volunteered, take out all the spotted and brown right now so that you'll know that I didn't do anything wrong. According to other commentaries, that was Lavan's cheating. Originally, they were supposed to be there and mate, and Lavan cheated and took them out, and that's why Yaakov had to figure out a different way of making the kids come out spotted. Our sages say that the thing a person views affect him. Chazal say different colors affect people a different way. Rav Moshe Kordaviru writes that if you wear black, black affects a person one way. You wear red, it affects a person another way. He says in heaven, each color represents a different trait. And the colors, when we view them, also represent those traits to us subliminally. We don't understand exactly, but colors affect us. So the things that we see affect our traits as well. A person that's always going to see black, that's going to affect them one way. Today, psychologists say the same thing. But we have it in Chazal from 1,500 years ago, that the colors affect the person. They affect our nature, the colors that we see. Chazal also say that the things a person sees when they're conceiving will affect the baby. Rav Yochanan was an extraordinarily beautiful person. He had eyelashes that covered his eyes. He couldn't see. He couldn't see unless he'd lift them with tweezers. Ordinarily, he was practically blind. He would go and sit next to the mikveh where the women would come out, and then they'd go home and be intimate with their husbands. And he'd say, let the women come out of the mikveh. When he'd need a break from his learning, he'd sit there. They'd come out of the mikveh. He wouldn't see them because he had the thick eyelashes. He couldn't see. But they'd see his beauty, and then they'd come home and they'd have beautiful kids. Chazal say it affects a person. What we see affects
the chick had that black kid.
Huh?
The chick who was looking at the portrait of the Kushite, and then her cave came out black.
So Yaakov sets up. Yaakov sets up. Chazal say that what we look at affects it. Yeah, affects the kids. Chassidim therefore have a custom that pregnant women don't go to the zoo. Chassidim have this custom. So Yaakov sets up. In the, hey guys, I heard this back when I was a kid in first grade. You guys are laughing, but for me, this is like when I learned this parsha. That's what the Rebbe said. I had Chassidish Rebbe's. They didn't say it as Chassidim do this. They said it so everyone knows pregnant women don't go to the zoo, right? This custom, it's interesting. I asked Rav Halberstam about it, and he said that he researched it. He doesn't know of a source for it, but those who have it, okay, they could stick to it. But a person doesn't have to be, what? No, Rav Moshe Halberstam from the Badat Seyda Haredis. So, at any rate, Yaakov sets up these pieces of wood with he strips off some of the white and it looks striped and white and black and brown, and the sheep end up coming out pregnant. And Yaakov sees a vision in which Hashem shows him that he's been, every time Lavan keeps switching the deal, Hashem keeps interfering and ensuring that Yaakov gets the right sheep to be born so that he becomes very, very wealthy. Now Yaakov sees that Lavan is getting dangerous, and this is the history of Jewish people. Wherever we go, we're being put down, we're being cheated, we're having all the cards stacked against us, and then we figure out a way around it. We get a little country, we get everything we do, we get yelled at, and so we figure out high tech, we figure out something, okay, how are we going to get around all these problems? We get swampland, so we figure out how to irrigate in the swamplands, we figure out Gush Katif, we figure out how to make hydroponics, we figure out how to grow in the desert. The history of the Jewish people, the Medrash says we're like oil. They keep pouring water on top of us, and we keep floating to the top. That's what happens to Yaakov. Lavan cheats him in every way in the book. And Hashem keeps helping us. Yaakov overcomes. And the Rambam says one of the things that Yaakov teaches us is that when one deals with a business world, one gets the feeling, I will only succeed if I cheat like them. Yaakov is there to teach us it's not like that. The person is supposed to be honest. The person is supposed to be fair. And he's supposed to do his thing. And hopefully Hashem will help him be succeed like Yaakov was successful against Laban. And God tells him it's time to go back to Israel. Yaakov calls out his wives out to the field. From here we learn if you have a secret to say, don't say it out there. Someone in here could be listening. Don't say it in a building where you don't know who's listening behind the door. Go out to the field where you see all around you. You see there's no one listening. That's where you say your secrets. Be careful because there are people, like Chazal say, Oznaim Lakota, the walls have ears. So Yaakov takes them out to the field and they agree with him, we got to go back. Now, trophim, what are the trophim? What is this idol that Laban has? They slaughter a firstborn human being, they take his skull, they do some incantation, they salt the skull, and with specific types of sorcery, they could get that skull to talk afterwards. There's a whole medrash about how they would do it, and then they could consult with that skull. So Rachel doesn't want him to serve that skull. Rachel doesn't want that skull to tell Laban exactly where they're located. So Rachel takes it, and Laban comes chasing after them when he hears they've gone. And Laban goes to his trophim to ask them, where do I find Yaakov? And they're not there. He doesn't find his idol, the trophim. Rachel has taken it. Rachel has taken the trophim from her father, and Yaakov does not know about it. Yaakov, in the beginning of our parsha, took a vow, which he said, I will give a tithe, I will build a temple. And next week's parsha, he will come to the land of Israel, and he will not be swift to fulfill his vow. In the end of our parsha, Yaakov says, whoever stole it will drop dead. These two actions, Yaakov's declaration, whoever stole it will drop dead, and Yaakov's vow at the beginning of the parsha, are what will lead to the untimely death of Rachel in next week's parsha. She dies young, and our sages attribute it to Yaakov's taking a vow and not fulfilling it quickly. Our sages say if one takes a vow and is not quick to fulfill it, God takes the life of their spouse and their children. And the other thing is Yaakov's declaration, whoever stole that idol will drop dead. At the end of the parsha, they make a pact and they build a pile of stones and they hide a sword in the middle of those stones. And they say, whoever will cross these stones, my family to harm you or your family to harm us, will be killed by this sword. Laban's descendant, Bilam, crosses those stones. Min Aram Yancheni, he comes from Aram. He is a great grandson of Lavan, and he comes to curse the Jewish people. En route, the mule bashes his leg against a pile of stones. Which pile of stones? This pile of stones. Bilam loses his leg on this pile of stones, and when the time comes for the great war against the Midianites, when Bilam gets killed, after he has cursed us, our chief of staff, Pinchas, the Kohen, travels out to this pile of stone, digs deeply and pulls out the sword over which they made a pact that whoever crosses these stones will get killed by this sword, takes that sword to kill Bilam, Lavan's descendant, who transgressed this pact and came over to kill us. Shabbat Shalom.